One Hate by Aaron Dembski Bowden. I am the future of my chapter. My masters and mentors often tell me this. They say I, and those like me, hold the chapter's soul in our hands. We wear the black, and we are the beating heart of a reborn brotherhood. It is our duty to remember. We are charged to recall the traditions that came before the moment when our chapter stood on the edge of extinction. My name is Argo. In a chapter with few remaining relics, I am blessed above my brothers in the tools of war in my possession. My armor was born when the Imperium was born, repaired, amended, and maintained in the centuries since by generations of warriors, slaves, servitors, and serfs. My bolter roared on the battlefields of the Horus Heresy and has been carried in the red-marked hands of 37 Astartes since the day of its forging. Each of their names is etched into the dark iron of the weapon, along with the name of the world that claimed their lives. The eyes of my helm have stared out onto 10,000 wars and seen a million of mankind's foes die. Around my neck is a gift from the Ecclesiarchy of Holy Terror, an Aquila symbol of priceless worth and imbued with the warding secrets of a technology almost lost to time. My armor is black, for I am death itself. My helm is the skull of every man that died in every battle fought by my chapter in the 10 millennia since our founding. More than that, my face is the victorious leer of the dying emperor. And why am I charged with this responsibility? Why do I wear the black? Because I hate. I hate more than my brothers, and my hatred runs blacker, deeper, purer than theirs. One hate stands above all others. One hate that burns in our blood and barks from the mouths of 500 bolters when we stand together in war. It is a hatred with many names. The Greenskin, the Orc, the Kine. To us, they are simply the enemy. We are the Crimson Fists, the Shield Hand of Dawn, and we have survived extinction when all others would have fallen into worthless memory. Our hatred takes us across the stars in service to the throne, and now it brings us to Cyrell. Cyrell, a lone orb around a diminutive sun, on the edge of Segmentum Tempestus, the single celestial child of a red star that was taking thousands of years to die. The sun's waning would take thousands of years before its eventual expiration, and the planet it warmed was still of great use to the Imperium. Cyrell was an agri-world, with the globe's landmasses given over to expansive and fertile continents of foodstuffs and livestock. Cyrell's great oceans were similarly plundered by imperial need. Beneath their dark surface, the tides concealed hydroponic facilities the size of cities, harvesting the edible wealth of the depths. As a planet, Cyrell had but one colossal purpose: to export a system's worth of food, ready for purchase by the worlds nearby that lack such natural bounty. Cyrell fed free hive worlds, from the spires of the rich to the slums of the destitute, as well as several Imperial Navy fleets and regiments of the Imperial Guard warring in nearby crusades. From space, Cyrell was the blue-green of mankind's ancestral memory, as if drawn from an artist's imagining of the impious ages of old Terra. However, the face of a world can change a great deal in a year.
"The Fists are back."
Lord General Ulverian looked at Major Dace, who had spoken those words. With his thin face, ice-blue eyes, and aquiline nose, the Lord General was a natural when it came to bestowing withering looks on those among his staff that disappointed him. He gave one of those glances to Dace now. The Major looked away, suitably chastised. The gunship, sat idle, as it had for several minutes now, its landing stanchions and velocity thrusters still hissing with occasional jets of steam as they released flight pressure and settled into repose. Across the side of this midnight blue vulture of a vessel, an engraved symbol stared back at the horde of guardsmen that waited, a clenched fist, as red and dark as good wine. The gunship's forward ramp lowered like a mouth opening. Alvaran was put in mind, as he always was when seeing an Astartes Thunderhook, of a great steel bird of prey. When its forward ramp lowered, just beneath the cockpit window, the bird seemed to roar with the sound of whining hydraulics.
"I count four," Major Dace said, making this his second most obvious observation that day.
Four armoured forms, each more than a head taller than a normal man, tramped down the clanking ramp.
"Just four," the Major added a moment later.
Alviron would gladly have shot him, had he been able to think of a reason to do so. Not even a good reason, just a legal one. Dace was an asset on the battlefield, but at staff meetings his dullard observations were a tedium his fellow officers could easily do without. The Astartes made no move to approach the crowd of guardsmen. They stood as still as statues, monstrous bolters held to their eagle-emblazoned chests. Alviron took stock of the situation. The Astartes were back, and it was not the time to stand around gawping. Control. The scene warranted control. Maybe there could be some dignity salvaged from this whole tawdry development. Having the Astartes arrive would be a cause for celebration right enough, but Alviron recalled every single word in the missive he composed to Chapter Master Cantor of the Crimson Fists. Begging was the only word for it, really. He'd begged for aid. And here it was, deliverance once more. He was not a man who enjoyed resorting to begging. It had galled him even as he dictated the distress call. Alviron strode forward to meet the giants as they stood stone still in the shadow of their avian gunship. He noted, with unnoticeable displeasure, that the heavy bolter turrets on the Thunderhawk's wingtips panned across the camp, as if seeking threats even amongst Imperial forces. Did the Fists not even consider the guard capable of holding their own base camp secure against the enemy? In that moment, deliverance or not, the Lord General hated their damned arrogance.
"Welcome back,"
he said to the first of the Astartes, who was undoubtedly the commander of this small team. The warrior looked at the Lord General, his snarling visored helm turning down to regard the human. This close, no more than an arm's length from the towering warriors, Alviron felt his gums ache from the pressuring hum of the squad's power armour. The whine of energy was more tactile than audible, making his eyes water and prickling the skin on the back of his neck. He swallowed as the Astartes made the sign of the Aquila, the warrior's gauntleted hands forming the salute and banging against his armoured chest. Even the smallest of the movements made their armour joints purr in a low, mechanical snarl. Alviron returned the salute. His neck hurt a little, looking up like this, and he unwillingly flinched when the Astartes spoke.
"With all due respect."
The voice was a crackling, vox-distorted growl, far deeper than a normal man's.
"Why are you addressing me?"
Alviron hadn't expected this level of disrespect, nor this degree of informality. He was a Lord General, after all. Planets lived and died by his tactical expertise. The General took in the details of the warrior's armour. The suit was the blue of a starless midnight sky, trimmed in places with a bold red, nowhere more noticeable than the clenched fist on the warrior's shoulder pad. A scroll detailing oaths and matters of unknowable honour was draped from the warrior's other shoulder pad, moving slightly in the gentle breeze. Hanging from a thick chain that had been made into a bandolier, oversized, misshapen skulls knocked quietly together as the Astartes moved. From the pronounced lower jaws and brutish bone structure, Alviron knew they were the skulls of orcs. In life, they'd been big orcs, most likely leaders among their bestial kind. In death, they were impressive trophies.
This Astartes was clearly the leader of the squad. None of the others wore trophies to match.
I am addressing you because I assumed you were in command.
He adopted the tone of one speaking to a small child, which his men would have found both laughable and insane had they heard. The thrill of authority over these giants rushed through the Lord General's blood. He would, after all, brook no disrespect.
"Do I look like a brother captain to you?"
the Astartes said, and Olvaran wondered if the warrior's vox speakers made his voice into a growl, or if it was naturally that low. Olvaran nodded in response to the question. He was determined not to be intimidated.
"To my eyes, yes, you do." "Well, I'm not."
Here the Astartes looked to his fellows.
"Not yet, anyway."
Olvaran heard something at the edge of his hearing, a series of quiet clicks coming from the helms of the armoured men. He assumed, quite correctly, that they were laughing with each other over a private vox channel. The Astartes, draped in skulls, chains and scrolls, detailing his many victories, inclined his head at one of the others.
"He's the sergeant."
Olvaran turned to face the next one, making the sign of the Aquila once more. Before the Lord General could speak, this next Astartes, who was clad in a blood-coloured toga draped around his armour, shook his helmed head.
"No, Lord General,"
the Astartes intoned, his voice as much a mechanical rumble as the first one's had been.
"You do not address me either."
Olvaran's patience was reaching its end.
"Then who am I to address?"
The robed warrior nodded in the direction of the Thunderhawk, at the newest arrival striding down the ramp. This Astartes was clad in plate of charcoal black, and even without much knowledge of Astartes technology, it was clear to Olvaran that the dark suit of power armour was an antique, dating back centuries, probably even millennia. The black warrior's helmed face was a grinning skull, the red eye lenses lending it a demonic cast as he looked left and right, surveying the landing site. Olvaran swallowed, unaware of how his Adam's apple bobbed and betrayed his nervousness. Throne, he thought, a chaplain. The Astartes in the red toga offered the Lord General a slight bow.
"You address him."
In private, they discussed Cyrell. The chaplain stalked around the large table with its map-covered surface. Here in the Lord General's command room, aboard his personal baneblade, the indomitable will, the human and the Astartes shared words away from the ears of others. "We handed you this world 4 months ago." Those words chilled the Lord General's blood. They were an insult, certainly, but they were also an inarguable truth.
"Circumstances change, Brother Chaplain."
And they had. Orc reinforcements had come in flooding waves, washing the Western Hemisphere in a tide of greenskin invaders. The Imperium's easy victory, largely brought by the surgical strikes of the Crimson Fists 4 months before, was nothing more than a pleasant memory and a tale of what might have been. The Imperial Guard had been falling back ever since. The chaplain's vox voice was edged by growls, as if the man spoke at an octave almost too low for words.
"You are losing, Cyrell," the Astartes said. His skullish face stared at the human across the room.
"I know better than to argue that assessment," came the Lord General's reply. "I'd wager that I see it clearer than you, for I have been watching it happen for months."
Olvaran watched as the chaplain reached up to his helm and pulled the release catches on his armoured collar. With a serpentine hiss of venting pressure, the locks disengaged, and the Astartes removed his skulled helmet, reverently lifting it, then laying it on the table before him. Its red eyes were dimmed now the helm was detached from the armour's power supply, but they still glared at the Lord General in dull accusation.
"I'm not here to chastise you, Lord General."
Olvaran smiled to hear the warrior's true voice. It was deep and resonant, but with a gentility shaping the words. The chaplain was, by the Lord General's best guess, close to 30 years of age, but with the Astartes it was almost impossible to tell. He didn't even know for certain if they did age. He'd always taken the trope for granted that one determined a space marine's age by the scars on his face and the inscriptions etched into their armour. Had this Astartes been allowed to grow as a normal man, he might have been considered handsome. Even as the product of intensive genetic enhancement since puberty, the chaplain was a fair example of his kind. The Astartes was almost 2 heads taller than a normal man, with features and body mass to match, but Alviron saw something undeniably human within the warrior's dark blue eyes and the half-smile he wore. The Lord General liked him immediately, for Alviron, who prided himself on being a fine reader of men, this was a rare development.
"Brother Chaplain."
"Argo," he interrupted. "My name is Argo."
"As you wish. I must ask you, Argo, how did you respond so quickly to our..."
He didn't want to say to our plea.
"To our request for reinforcements."
Argo met his gaze. The half-smile left his face, and the warrior's eyes narrowed. The silence that followed the general's question bordered on becoming awkward.
"Just good fortune," the chaplain said at last, the smile returning. "We were close to the system."
"I see. And are you alone?"
The chaplain spread his hands in beneficence. One gauntlet was the same coal-black as the warrior's armour. The other, his left, was painted blood-red in keeping with the traditions of his chapter.
"I bring with me the brothers of Squad Demetrian of the 5th Battle Company."
"Yourself and 4 others? Nothing more?"
"The chapter serfs and servitors responsible for the flight and maintenance of our Thunderhawk."
"No more Astartes."
It was a statement of resignation, not a question.
"As you say." The chaplain offered a shallow but sincere bow. "No more Astartes."
Orviron was noticeably ill at ease.
"As much as I thank the throne and your chapter master for any assistance the fists offer, especially so quickly, I had hoped for a bolder show of support."
"Hope is the first step on the road to disappointment. 4 months ago we broke the enemy back here. I assume you recall the date."
"I do. The men still speak of it. They call it Vengeance Night."
"Very apt. We left the enemy reeling, Lord General. We left them bloody, their armies shattered from our assaults across the globe. It was at the siege of the Cantoral Palace. I was part of the strike force that destroyed the palace itself, and I was there when Brother Imric of the 5th took the head of Warlord Golgorad in the battle amongst the smoking rubble. We are back, Lord General, and I humbly suggest you be grateful for even the small blessing one squad of our chapter represents."
"I am grateful to you and your chapter master."
"Good. I apologize for any harshness in my tone. Now let us talk of strategy."
The chaplain pointed with his red hand at the largest map spread across the table.
"Savspire, the capital city, unless I am mistaken."
"You are not."
"And according to the census sweeps made by my Thunderhawk as we broke orbit, the city and the site of the Cantoral Palace at the city's heart is once more in the hands of the enemy."
"It is."
Argo's blue eyes met Olvaron's, drilling into the officer with an unblinking lack of mercy.
"So when do we take it back?"
The interior bay of the Thunderhawk echoed with Argo's footfalls, his clanking tread ringing from the iron skin of the inert machinery stored there. Chapter serfs in robes of deep blue stepped aside, making the sign of the Aquila as he passed. Argo nodded to each one in kind, whispering benedictions for all of them. They thanked him and moved about the business of attending to the gunship's innards and readying the stored machinery. Argo's eyes raked along the heavy digging equipment stored in the hold, and his mood turned black. Squad Demetrian was training. He heard them long before he saw them, climbing a ladder to the next deck. Argo thumped the door release to the communal quarters, a room where Astartes remained strapped in flight seats when the gunship took to the skies. In the small, usable space between the twin rows of seats, two of Squad Demetrian jeweled in full armour. The two warriors could not have been less alike. His armour draped in scrolls of his deeds, bone tokens of fallen foes, and the skulls of seven orcs hanging from his chain bandolier. Imric was a whirlwind of movement. Kicks, punches, elbow thrusts, headbutts, all thrown into a duel with short swords, added between the moves of the clashing blades. Opposing him was Toma, embodying pure economy of motion. Where Imric's fury twinned with his skill, Toma's movements were calculated to the finest degree by a lightning mind that drove his vicious combat reflexes. His blade snapped into position to block and thrust in a silver blur, stopping precisely at each twist, never overbalancing, never overreaching, with Toma never giving ground.
"I'll wear you down, Deathwatch," Imric teased.
Their gladius blades locked again, and the two helms glared at each other, only a half meter apart. Toma said nothing. Displayed on the polished iron of his unique shoulder pad was the stylized symbol of the Holy Inquisition. He always fought in silence. His recent return from 3 years in the Specialist Ordo Xeno's Death Watch chapter hadn't changed that. The fight came to an end when Argo cleared his throat. Disengaging from one another, Imric and Toma resheathed their blades.
"I had you, Death Watch,"
Imric saluted his opponent with his clenched left fist against his heart.
"Sure you did, hero."
Toma's voice was toneless as he returned the gesture.
"I had you. The day you have me is the day the Emperor rises from the throne and dances all night long."
Brother Sergeant Demetrian silenced them both with a fist pounded against the metal wall.
"News, Brother Chaplain?" the sergeant asked.
Argo removed his helm and gave them his half-smile.
"They think we're here in answer of a distress call."
The squad looked at the chaplain, awaiting further explanation. Now, this had their interest up.
"You didn't tell them the truth," said Demetrian.
The veteran's scarred face was a map of battles fought across 100 systems. Both his gauntlets were crimson. He'd served time in the Crusade Company, among the best of the best, and on the knee of his armour, a black Templar cross was proudly displayed. The Declartes Crusade, when the Templars and the Fists broke ranks to fight in mixed units, was a point of great honour for both chapters. Demetrian had been there. A roll of his honours was recorded in acid-etched lettering on a gold tablet in the chapter's fortress monastery, back home on Rinsworld. Argo nodded.
"I thought it best to retain the illusion of our compliance. The truth would breed animosity."
"No surprise."
Demetrian's words were as clipped and to the point as ever.
"The plan remains the same."
"We fight until the Cantoral Palace, then we do the duty entrusted to us. I saw the maps of South Spire and the enemy's forces spread across the sector. A new warlord leads the enemy on the far side of the city, and the guard ready for their last attempt at a big push. The city itself is flooded with roaming bands of foes."
"Numbers?"
"Thousands within the city, tens of thousands at the edge, where the warlord waits."
"I like those odds," Imric said.
They all heard the smile in his words, even from behind his helm.
Argo shook his head. "This is not a war we can win without the guard."
Now Thomas spoke up. He sat in one of the restraining seats, meticulously dismantling and cleaning the sacred bolter given to him by the Ordo Xenos during his tenure in the Inquisitorial kill teams.
"Will the guard win this fight without us?"
Argo shrugged.
"We have our orders."
Toma pressed on.
"And once we leave?"
"The Emperor protects,"
the chaplain replied. Imric's skulls rattled as he turned.
"So we flee a war that the Imperium is losing. I don't like the thought of running from the Kine."
Duly noted, but Chapter Master Kentor was clear in his priorities, Argo said.
"And you will do penance for your disrespect of the enemy, Brother Imric."
It was a matter of small shame among some of the Crimson Fists that they referred to the Greenskins as Kine. On Rinsworld,
another agri-world. It was slang for cattle.
Yes, Brother Chaplain,
Imric growled. Hate the human, slaughter the impure, and praise the Emperor above all, but always respect the foe.
Yes, Brother Chaplain.
Imric wanted to insist Argo stopped quoting the litanies at him. Instead, he bowed his head. He knew better than to apologize.
Then when do we move out?
Demetrian cut in. Tomorrow night. The guard will advance, Argo said, as he held his golden Aquila medallion in his red-fingered gauntlet. And we advance with them. Dawn found Argo in the cockpit of the Thunderhawk, still in his armour. He sat in one of the command thrones, his elbows on his knees, staring out of the window. He had not slept. He was Astartes. He barely needed sleep. Tomer came to him as he mused on the coming battle. The quiet warrior was a powerful credit to the squad, and Argo, who was over a century younger than the Death Watch specialist, always welcomed his presence. He suspected it would not be long before the captain of the Fifth selected Tomer for promotion into the Crusade Company, or to lead his own squad into the field of war.
Another dawn, Brother Chaplain.
Tomer took the command throne next to Argo, sitting and holding his helm in his hands. The Death Watch had aged him, Argo saw. New scars, faded from fast treatment, but still noticeable, pitted the warrior's cheek and temple. Acid burns, Argo said, gesturing with a gloved hand, his black one. The Death Watch kept you busy?
I can't say,
Tomer replied. His face was as expressive as stone. Can't or won't? Argo asked, already knowing the answer.
Both.
The Order Xenos keeps its secrets close.
It does.
Tomer's expression was edged with thought as he replayed hazy recollections, little more than echoes through his mind. Oaths had been sworn. Promises were made. Memories were torn from the mind by psych-enhanced meditation and the ungentle scouring of arcane machinery. It was the first time Argo had seen his fellow Fist's neutral mask slip, and he found it fascinating. We go to war today, the chaplain said. We are a poor portion of the Fifth's strength, but we are the Fifth, nonetheless. In the fires of war, we are forged. And yet I sense a burden on your soul, brother. Tomer nodded. This was why he had come.
It's Vane.
Brother Apothecary Vane was in the Thunderhawk's confined apothecarian, little more than an operating table and racks of monitoring equipment fastened to the small room's walls. Already prepared for the battle tonight, he was in full armour, with one exception. His head was bare. The white-faced helm that marked him as an apothecary rested on the surgery table, and this was the first thing Argo saw as he entered. The second thing was Vane himself, adjusting data readouts on his arm-mounted nethicarium. As Argo watched, several surgical spikes and knives snapped back into the bulky medical unit housed on Vane's forearm. Vane eventually turned to the sound of thrumming power armor, though his enhanced senses would have detected the chaplain's approach long before he came into the room.
Argo,
he said in subdued greeting. Vane, the chaplain nodded back. The atmosphere between the two men was nothing short of ugly. 7 years before, they'd served together as novices in Noclatan's scout squad. 7 years since the final trials to become Astartes, when Argo had been chosen to wear the black and Vane the white. A chaplain and an apothecary, drawn from the same scout unit. Sergeant Noclatan, who, like Demetrian, had served admirably in the Crusade Company among the chapter's elite, had been honoured by Chapter Master Cantor himself for honing such excellence in a novice squad. With the chapter still in its perilous rebuilding stage, the finest warriors of the Crimson Fists were often charged with the duty of training novice squads. It was no shame to step away from the first company to the role of scout sergeant, and Noclatan was one of the most respected. Beyond a few scars, Argo looked no different. The same could not be said for the apothecary. Half of Vane's face was gone, replaced by cold, smooth steel, shaped to resemble his features. Despite its artistry and exquisite workmanship, was clear evidence of a terrible wound that had almost been Vane's death. Vane's left eye, an augmetic lens of synthetic scarlet crystal, whirred in its circular socket as the apothecary focused his gaze on the chaplain.
"You're looking well," he remarked.
Argo didn't reply. He watched as Vane limped around the surgical table and considered the rest of the apothecary's newly restored body. Demon fire had done this to Vane during the cleansing of Cairo 2 months before. Fresh from the victory on Syrao and the destruction of the Cantoral Palace, the Crimson Fists had entered the warp for several weeks to reach Cairo. Answering a call for aid by their planetary governor, mutant cults were spreading in the rotting industrial sectors of his world. A true purge was needed to stamp the problem out, after the local defense forces had failed to quell the matter. The Fists had not failed. It took a month and was not without casualties, but their duty was done. The rest of the strike force returned to Rin's world at the behest of Chapter Master Cantor. Argo and Squad Demetrian have returned to Syrael aboard the support cruiser Vigil. It had been a cold, quiet journey back to Syrael. They were the only Astartes on board, except for a single apothecary from the 5th Company that remained to preside over Vane's injuries and act in his stead if the younger man died. Vane had suffered as the servitors and his potential replacement rebuilt his body. He was almost certain to die, given the massive burns sustained and their initial refusal to heal. The chapter would lose a gifted healer in a time when the Fists most desperately needed to reclaim and preserve their fighting strength. Had Vane died, it would have been a true loss. From shoulder to fingertips, his left arm was augmetic. It connected internally to the bionic sections of his spine and collarbone, purring in a smooth hiss of expensive augmentation that Argo's keen hearing could detect even underneath the background hum of their power armor. As with his left arm, so too was his left leg bionic, from hip to toes. The augmentations were still new, still untested in battle. And although Argo doubted a normal human could discern the minute inconsistencies in Vane's gait and posture, to Astartes' senses it registered as a subtle but noticeable hitch in his stride. A limp. It was temporary, until the augmetics aligned with Vane's body patterns and wholly fused with his biorhythms. The leg ended in a splayed claw of a foot for enhanced stability. A cross of blackened metal that connected to the well-armored ankle joint and the heavy musculature of the bionic shin and calf above. "Your attitude is beginning to create strain within the squad," Argo began. "I am told you are melancholic." Vane scowled. His false eye hummed in its socket as he tried to conform to his facial expression. As it tried to conform to his facial expression.
"Brother Sergeant Demetrian has said nothing."
"You were saved because you have value to the chapter. You stand in high regard for your skills. Why are you unbalanced by wounds which heal even as we speak?" Vane watched his own crimson left gauntlet close and open, repeating the motion several times. It was his bionic arm, and feeling was slow in returning.
"I trained a lifetime in my own body. Now I fight in someone else's."
"It is still your body."
"Not yet. There is acclimatization to come."
"Then you will acclimatize. There is no more to say."
"You don't see. This is not false pathos, Argo. I was perfect before. Made in the Emperor's image in accordance with his ancient and most sacred designs.
You still are?
No. I am a simulacrum.
He clenched his augmetic hand into a numb fist.
I am the best imitation we are capable of creating. I am no longer perfect.
Our brothers in the Iron Hands would dispute that diagnosis. Vane scoffed.
Those uninspired slaves of the Mechanicum. They make war at the pace of toothless old men.
If you resort to insults against our brother chapters, I will lose my temper as well as my patience.
My point is that I am no Iron Hand, and I have no wish to be some half-flesh imitation Astartes.
You will acclimatize. Argo stepped forward, taking Vane's helm from the table, and looking down at the white faceplate.
Even so, until then I am a liability to my brothers.
Argo handed his friend the helmet and shook his head. You are petulant beyond my comprehension. Only in death does duty end. We are the Fists. We are the Shield Hand of Dawn. We do not weep and cower from battle because of pain or fear or worries of what might yet be. We fight and die because we are made to fight and die. Vane took the helm and smiled without humour. Half of his face didn't follow the expression. What amuses you?
You are blind, Argo. You may preserve the soul of our chapter, but I preserve its body. I harvest the gene seed of the fallen, and I ensure the wounded will fight again. So listen to me, brother. I fear nothing but allowing my failures to harm my brethren. I am not at peak performance, and I am unused to the wounds I still wear under this armor. That is the source of my unbalance.
You lose your own argument. You fear to let down your brothers because your battle skills are hindered for a short while. Vane, you are harming your brothers far more with your withdrawn attitude and the bitterness leaking from your every word. You are eroding their trust in you and destroying their confidence. Argo's battle collar pulsed a single blip. He tensed his neck, activating the pearl-like vox bead attached to his throat, which picked up the vibrations of his vocal cords. Brother Chaplain Argo, speak.
Brother Chaplain, it was Lord General Ulviron. I have a request to ask you and your warriors.
I will be with you shortly, Argo said, and killed the link. The silence between Argo and Vane returned.
Your point is taken, Vane conceded. I will not allow my melancholy to take my squad any longer.
That is all I demand. Argo was already turning to leave.
I remember when you could not make such demands of me, Argo.
I remember a time when I did not need to make them. The Fists shed blood before the guards' nighttime advance. Under Ulviron's request, Argo and Demetrian led the squad into the shattered remains of the city's western sector. In the minutes leading up to deployment, Argo had gathered the warriors together in the shadow of their Thunderhawk. Dozens of guardsmen around the camp looked on, dallying about their business, while they watched the Astarte soldiers perform their rite. The Fists ignored them all. With his gladius, Argo sliced the palm of each warrior's left hand. They, in turn, pressed their bleeding hands together against the chest piece of the fist next to them. Imric rested his hand on the embossed silver edge decorating Tomer's breastplate. The Laramon cells in his blood scabbed and sealed the gash quickly, but not before his palm left a dark smear on Tomer's imperial symbol.
"My life for you," Imric said, then removed his hand and fastened his helm.
Tomer was next, pressing his bleeding hand against Vane's breastplate.
"My life for you,"
the Death Watch veteran said, before donning his own helm. Vane forced a smile. He had to perform the rites with his remaining flesh hand, his right instead of his left, and did so without complaint. When it came to the chaplain's turn, Argo rested his hand on Demetrian's armour, as tradition necessitated the officiating chaplain to honour the ranking officer.
"My life for you," Argo said.
A moment later, his senses were submerged in the audio-visual chaos of his battle helm. On the island's displays, he saw the flickering readouts of the squad's vital signs, communication runes, lists of vox channels, sight-altering lens options, thermo-conditional and local atmospheric readouts, and a cluster of information pertaining to the myriad functions of his armour. All of the information added up to one thing.
"Ready,"
he voxed to the others, blink-clicking most of the lens displays into transparency.
"Ready,"
they voxed back. They'd started walking then, loping strides that emitted a chorus of mechanical growls from their armour joints. The guardsmen parted like a sea as the Astartes neared them. With blood on their imperial eagles, the Crimson Fists went to war. That had been 3 hours ago. The Fists took a Guard Chimera troop transport to the city limits, and were advancing through the western edge of South Spire. It was a scouting run, and progress was predicted by Lord General Ulviron to be fast. Intelligence had pinned enemy resistance in this section of the city to be minimal. Only at the city's centre was resistance expected to pick up. Intelligence had been wrong about that. Argo crouched in the ruins of what had once been an administratum building, where hundreds of barely educated wage slaves typed their lives away into cogitators that amassed Cyrell's exportation data, pressed against a wall half tumbled down months ago from Imperial basilisk shelling. The chaplain waited, unmoving, listening to the thrum of his power armour and the sounds of several foes breathing nearby. Roaming bands of greenskins claim this part of the city. Squad Demetrian had abandoned the Chimera long before, in favour of stalking through the ruins and clearing a path for the guard's advance tonight. Argo heard the Xenos trampling closer around the corner. They muttered to each other in their guttural, swinish tongue. The chaplain tasted bile in his mouth. Their inhumanity repelled him. He heard the bestial things pause in their lazy search, heard them snuffling at the air and grunting. They had his scent, he was sure of it, and his blood ran hot as he clenched his short combat sword in one hand, his bolter in the other. At his hip hung his deactivated Crozius Arcanum, the symbolic weapon of his role in the chapter, capped by a eagle-shaped maul, fashioned from blackened adamantium. It was a fearsome bludgeon when sheathed in its crackling power field. Argo's Crozius had belonged to ancient Amantus, one of the first Crimson Fist chaplains, a founder of the chapter from when the Primarch divided the Imperial Fist's legion 10 millennia before. Upon an arm-length shaft of dark metal, the inscription "Traitor's Bane" was written in High Gothic. He treasured the relic weapon, which still felt unfamiliar in his fists even after 7 years. Against detritus such as these greenskins, his gladius was more than enough to suffice. He would not let the filthy blood of weakling Xenos mar an honourable weapon dating back to the Great Crusade. The first of the creatures, alert now, came around the corner. In its fists was a collection of scrap that evidently served the greenskin as a firearm. Argo surged to his feet, superhuman reflexes enhanced even further by his armour, and before the orc could utter a sound, it was falling backwards with the hilt of the chaplain's gladius protruding from its eye socket. Argo rounded the corner to meet the others head-on, and his bolter barked, spitting detonating shells into green flesh. 11 of them. Each hulking figure was momentarily outlined by a flicker of light in his helm's vision, cycling through target locks. But 11 was too many, even 4 in Astartes. In a flashing moment of anger, Argo cursed himself for not listening carefully to the breathing and trying to discern their numbers. It was his failing, he knew. He'd acted in rage, and now it was going to kill him. The brutish creatures ran at him, even as they took fire. massive fists gripping jagged axes that were pieced together from vehicle parts and industrial machinery. Argo's bolter cut down three orcs as his target reticule flitted between weak points in the greenskin's piecemeal armour.
"You dare exist in mankind's galaxy!" Argo's bolter spat its last shells, which destroyed an orc from the jaw up.
He clamped the weapon to his thigh with its magnetic seal, and threw his fist forward, shattering the forehead of the first greenskin to come in range.
"Die! Die knowing the crimson fists will cleanse the stars of your taint!"
Axes slashed towards him, which Argo weaved to avoid. A step back took him within reach of the first orc he'd felled, and he snatched up his gladius from the wretch's skull. Rivulets of dark blood slid along the silver blade, and the Astartes grinned behind his death's head mask.
"Come, alien filth! I am Argo, son of Rogaldorn, and I am your death!"
The mob of orcs ran in, and Argo met them, the Primarch's name on his lips.
"Break left."
The voice crackled over the vox, and Argo obeyed instantly, throwing himself into a roll that scattered a dust cloud in the ruins of the building. He came up, blade in hand, just as the speaker joined him in the fight. The midday sun flashed from Thomas' iron shoulder guard as he hammered the greenskins from behind. His bolter disgorged a stream of shells that exploded on impact in bursts of clear, hissing liquid. As he fired one-handed, he plunged his gladius into the throat of the closest greenskin, giving it a savage twist to half-sever the creature's head. Four of the orcs fell. The horrendously potent acid from Tomer's prized bolt rounds, overriding even the orcish resilience to pain as it ate through their flesh like holy fire. All of this happened before Argo's two hearts had time to beat twice. The last two orcs leapt at the fists to die in futility. Tomer impaled the first through the chest, shattered its face with a brutal headbutt, and fired a single bolt at point-blank range into the alien's temple. The skull gave way in a shower of gore as the explosive shell performed its sacred function. Gobbets of flesh and bone hissed as they span away. Eaten by the mutagenic acid in Thomas' Inquisition-sanctioned ammunition, Argo grappled with the second orc, his gauntlets wrapped around the thing's throat as it broke its thick nails scrabbling at his armour. He bore the howling greenskin to the ground, his weighty armour crushing the life from its chest as he strangled it in trembling fists.
"Die!"
The orc's answer was to roar voicelessly, its red eyes burning with rage. The Astartes grinned in mimicry of his helm and leaned close to the thing's face. His voice was a whisper through his vox speakers.
"I hate you."
Thomas stood to the side, reloading his bolter and scanning the ruins for more foes. Argo's skulled face pressed against the choking orc's forehead. Orcish sweat left dark smears against the bone cream faceplate.
"This is the Emperor's galaxy."
With a final surge of effort, he squeezed with all his strength. Vertebrae popped and cracked under the pressure.
"Mankind's galaxy, our galaxy. Know that as your worthless life ends."
"Brother Chaplain," Thomas said.
Argo barely heard. He let the creature fall dead and rose to his feet, savouring the taste of copper, bitter and hot on his tongue. His rage had not killed him after all. The enemy lay dead in great numbers.
"Brother Chaplain,"
Thomas repeated.
"What?"
Argo unclasped his bolter, reloading it now with the proper litany to the machine spirit within. There was a moment when Argo was sure Thomas would say something, chide him for letting his fury get the better of him, and lead him into reckless combat. Despite the break with tradition and authority, Argo would have accepted the criticism from a warrior like Tomer. Tomer said nothing, but the silence passing between the two Astartes was laden with meaning.
"Report," Argo said to break the silence.
"Imric and Vane report their section is clear now. Brother Sergeant Demetrium reports the same."
"Resistance."
Vane and Demetrian described it as savage. And Imric? He described it as thrilling.
Argo nodded. He was running low on ammunition and knew the others must be as well. Prepare for withdrawal. As Tomer voxed Argo's orders to the others, the young chaplain looked out across the ruined city. Small, by Imperial standards, large settlements were rare on an agri-world, yet the focus of so much destruction. On the other side of South Spire, the new warlord waited with the bulk of his horde, and in the heart of the city, the broken remains of the Cantoral Palace, the Fist's true goal, surrounded by foes. Argo's blood boiled as he spat a curse behind his mask. He wanted to press on. The palace was no more than a handful of hours away, but resistance from the roaming warbands was intense. With another squad of Astartes, just 5 more men, he'd have taken the chance. But alone it was suicide.
"What's that noise?" Thomas said.
Argo levelled his bolter. He'd heard it too.
Drums.
The music of primitives. Echoing across the city like the pounding heartbeat of an angry god.
It's a warning.
The Imperial Guard advanced that night, and the weather turned bitter as if the heavens recognized the humans' intent. Basilisks softened up the way ahead with relentless bombardments each hour. Orviron was content to endure this halting advance, frequently cutting forward progress to establish another artillery barrage that took an age to set up. He pored over maps and hollow displays in his Bane Blades command room as Imperial guns pounded their own city into dust. The big push consisted of the surviving elements of the Radamar 3rd Rifles, 7th Irregulars and 9th Armoured. These were the so-called Revenants, named for the many times Radamar had replaced entire regiments due to losses against the Greenskins in Segmentum Tempestus. Rebirth at the precipice of extinction was a blessing familiar to the Crimson Fists, and the chapter had fought well with the soldiers of Radamar countless times across the centuries. Hundreds of guardsmen clad in the gunmetal grey of the Radamar Revenants marched alongside rattling sentinels in the vanguard of the assault, flanked by Lehman-Russ battle tanks in half a dozen variants. Radamar was close to being a forge world in terms of its armoured exports. No Ravenant regiment ever went to war short of armour support. The bulk of Ulvaran's forces followed the vanguard, 6,000 men, including a detachment of stormtroopers, serving as his ceremonial guard, riding alongside his Bane Blade in 8 black-painted chimeras. At the rear of his main force came the artillery, griffins and basilisks, their punishing guns stowed and locked until the next time Ulvaran brought the column to a halt and ordered them to set up a shelling storm kilometres ahead. Last of all came the rearguard, made up of the Lord General's veteran guard squads, interspersed with auxiliary units, medical transports and supply trucks. The Fist's Thunderhawk gunship remained back at the abandoned base camp, at the city's edge, ready to be summoned. For a short while, until Argo scattered them, Squad Demetrian marched in the vanguard of the force, forming the vicious tip of the Imperium's conquering blade. In siving rain and howling winds, as the elements battered down upon the miserable Imperial advance, the war to retake South Spire began. The Fists soon bled away into the night, leaving Argo alone. Major Dace, who had been present in the Bane Blades command room when Argo reported the Fist's scouting run, couldn't resist voxing the chaplain now. Argo's suit insulated him from the noise of the rain, slashing against his ceramite armour, and he tensed his throat to activate his vox bead as it chimed. "Brother Chaplain Argo, speak."
"This is Major Dace of the Revenants."
Argo smiled as he heard the voice. The ritual processes that had moulded his body like clay, forming him into an Astartes, had given him a memory close to eidetic. It was known by most Imperial commanders who worked with Astartes that Space Marines possessed preternatural capacities for instant recollection. "Have we met?" Argo asked, with his half-smile in place. He didn't let his amusement leak into his voice. It had the direst effect. Dace's feathers were ruffled.
"I don't see the foretold resistance, Brother Chaplain.
All is quiet on the advance, is it not? I can still hear the drums, Argo noted, and he could, setting a distant rhythmic percussion to the thunder grinding across the sky.
I can't.
You are comfortably hidden in a tank, Major. Argo closed the link and added, and you are only human. The fists had been killing greenskins their entire, unnaturally long lives. Orvaron, no stranger to the orcish hordes himself, trusted Argo's belief that the drums pounded as a challenge to the Imperials. The new warlord, a curse upon his black heart, knew they were coming, and the drums of war beat to show he welcomed the coming bloodshed. The storm swallowed their noise now. Only the Astartes could make it out, and it was dimmed even to their senses.
Orvaron to all units, crackled the Lord General's hourly message. Dig in for bombardment, shelling to commence in 30 minutes.
Argo bit back a curse. Too slow. Much too slow. His thoughts were plagued by the Thunderhawk full of digging equipment back at the base.
Brother Chaplain.
The communication rune that flashed on his reddish lens display was, thankfully, not Dace. Imric's vital signs registered as almost a kilometre ahead. How goes the scouting, Brother Imric?
Lord,
Imric responded, speaking quietly and clearly.
I've found the coin. So have I, sir.
This was Vane, a kilometre to the west.
Contact!
Voxed Demetrian. His readout pinned him in the south. Argo looked over his shoulder at the procession of ocean-grey tanks with rain sluicing off their hulls. Numbers, he asked them, all over the squad's shared channel. The weather was banishing Vox integrity, masking all the words in a haze of crackles and hisses.
I count over 1,000 easily, Vane said. Perhaps 2.
Same, added Demetrian.
I've got more. I've got lots more.
Imric sounded overjoyed, but then, knowing Imric, he probably was.
Twice that number, I'm sure of it. If we hear from Tama, Imric added, we're in a whole world of trouble.
The Death Watch specialist had been sent to the south, stalking a good distance behind the rearguard. The Vox clicked live again.
Brother Chaplain, come in, said Tama.
The rest of his message was cut off by Imric's delighted laughter. With a cold feeling of metallic-tasting finality in his throat, Argo voxed the Lord General. Orvaron listened without hesitation. He ignored Dace's complaints and pulled the column into a still-advancing defensive spread that admirably took less than an hour to form. No small feat for that many soldiers and vehicles. The organizational aspects of war were where Orvaron most prided himself. An orderly army was a victorious one. The faster orders were obeyed, the more men survived. It was a simple mathematic he liked, and had a talent for putting into practice.
The shelling, Argo voxed to him, is doing nothing. The warlord has put significant forces into the city against us, and the horde ahead is falling back to draw us in.
Orvaron glared down at the hololithic display of the city, projected onto the large table. His bane blade rumbled as it rolled on.
We're surrounded.
If we stop now, Lord General, we will be. The pincers will close around us the moment we halt. If we push on at speed, we can make it to the Cantoral Palace and engage the forward elements before the rest of the noose can close around our throats.
Orvaron liked that. Turn the ambush into an attack.
Strike first, strike hard, and prepare to repel the rest of the attackers once the main force is crushed.
It sounded good. It sounded right, but...
I'm going purely on your word for this, Brother Chaplain.
Good, the Astartes replied, and ended the link.
The Cantoral Palace, voxed Demetrian.
Yes, squad, form up. We're taking the prize.
The Cantoral Palace had been the seat of the planetary governor, and a masterpiece of Gothic design, as skeletally, broodingly imperial as would be expected. All that remained was a series of shattered walls and a small mountain of rubble. Where once battlements and ridge towers had risen around a central bastion, the previous greenskin warlord had claimed it as his lair until the Crimson Fists had dissuaded him of the notion 4 months ago.
Refuting his claim of ownership involved razing the building to the ground with infiltrating sappers, and even then, the gigantic Xenos clad in its primitive power armor had survived to claw itself free from the smoking rubble. Imric had battled the warlord in the stone wreckage, finally taking its head after a long and bloody duel. He wore Warlord Golgorad's skull on his bandolier, giving it pride of place on his chest. The orc forces of this nameless new warlord evidently favoured the former site of battle. It was to be the anvil upon which the imperial forces would be crushed by the flanking hordes. Ulvaran's army did not march sedately to a doom surrounded by foes. Time was of the essence, and the Revenants powered on to meet the larger force ahead. Men held to the side of speeding tanks and rode atop vehicle roofs. Within the hour, the guards spilled with overwhelming force into the Great Plaza district where the Cantoral Palace's bones jutted from the ground. The armoured fist of the Revenants' advance crashed into the scattered greenskin lines. Rubble rained down as tanks unleashed the fury of their cannons, and a staccato chorus of heavy bolter fire filled the air between the thunder of main guns. Lacking entrenchments, the orcs countercharged the armoured column, finding walls of Imperial Guard coming to meet them. Lasfire sliced across the night, illuminating the battlefield like some hellish pre-dawn in scarlet sunlight. The rain lashed down on troopers in cold weather gear as they fired in disciplined ranks, and the orcs still came on in a roaring wave that drowned out the sound of thunder above. Imperial records came to know this battle as the Night of the Axe, when the Radamar regiments on Cyrell were decimated by the hordes of Xenos creatures they faced. Losses stood at 46%. Utterly damning Lord General Ulvaran's planned big push to face the new warlord that still lay in wait on the other side of the city. The guard was nowhere near enough to storm the warlord's position with any hope of success. The Radamar's one slim hope of survival on the kine-infested world, to strike the warlord down and cast the hordes into disarray, was gone. In turning the ambush into an attack of their own, the guard had delayed their destruction, but not avoided it. However, for the purposes of the Crimson Fists, the Night of the Axe was neither the most critical juncture in the war for Cyrell, nor was it even recorded in their rolls of honour, despite the harvest of lives reaped by Squad Demetrian of the Fifth Company. The Fists, in true Astartes autonomy, had a sacred duty of their own to perform. This came to light the following morning, as the Broken Guard made to move on from the scene of slaughter. The sector was a mess of bloodshed and battle fallout. The corpses of thousands of orcs and humans lay scattered over a square kilometre of annihilated urban terrain. The air thrummed with the growl of engines, frequently split by the cries of wounded men, ringing out as they were tended by medics or died in agony. Unfound among the charnel chaos that littered the ground, Argo walked among the dead, Gladius plunging down to end the lives of any greenskins that still drew breath. He listened to the General Vox channel as he performed his bloody work, making a mental note of casualties suffered by the guard. He knew they were sure to be destroyed if they pressed on to face the warlord, just as surely as they'd be destroyed when the warlord's armies came hunting for them. He felt a moment of pity for the guard. The Revenants were brave souls, who'd always stood their ground in the face of the enemy. It was a shame to see them expire like this, in utter futility. But the Fists would be long gone by then. As he approached the edge of the colossal vista of rubble that made up the bones of the Cantoral Palace, he activated his Vox and sent the signal he'd ached to send since his arrival. A single acknowledgement blip was the only answer he received, and the only answer he required. Squad Demetrian stood a short distance from the Lord General's Baneblade, honouring their war gear through daily prayer and muttered rituals. There they remained, ignoring the guard all around, until thrusters shrieked in the sky above.
"What in the name of hell is that doing here?" Lord General Ulvaran asked Major Dace, as they looked up at the dark shape coming in to land with a howl of engines.
The two officers left the cooling shadows of the command tank and approached the Astartes. Behind the warriors, throwing up a blizzard of dust, their thunderhawk kissed the rubble-strewn ground and settled on its clawed stanchion feet.
"Are you leaving?"
Ulveran demanded of Argo, aghast as he shouted above the cycling down engines. "No."
"Then what?"
"Move aside, Lord General," the chaplain said. "We need room for our equipment, and if you would be so kind as to move your bane blade, it would be appreciated." Dace, a short and rotund example of Radamar manhood, drew himself up to his unimpressive full height.
"We move within the hour. You can't do this, whatever it is you're doing."
"Yes," said Argo. "I can." His skullish helm glared down at the fat man. "And if you try to stop me, I will kill you." To his credit, Dace did a fine job at appearing unmoved by the vox-growled threat.
"We have orders from Segmentum Command, and the Crimson Fists must abide by them."
"That's an amusing fiction," Argo smiled, knowing the humans couldn't see his expression. "Feel free to entertain that fantasy as you get out of our way." Ulveran looked stricken, like he'd just taken a gut wound. He watched in mute sickness as servitors and robed serfs unloaded portable industrial equipment down the Thunderhawk's ramp. "If you do not move aside," Argo said with false patience in his voice, "the Thunderhawk lander, coming from orbit with more equipment, will be forced to destroy your bane blade to make room to land."
"Equipment?"
Dace was indignant.
"For what?"
It was Ulveran who answered. He'd seen the drills and clawed scoops of the machinery being unloaded.
"Digging."
The Lord General's face was wrinkled in thought. Margot favoured the officers with a bow. "Yes, digging. Now move aside, if you please." Defeated and confused, the two men backed away. Dace was red-faced and scowling, Ulveran subdued and voxing orders to make room for further Astartes landings. When the guard left just under an hour later, three Thunderhawks were nested in the ruins of the Kentaural Palace, each one freed of its cargo of servitors, serfs, and machinery.
"They're heading west,"
Imric nodded towards the rolling guard column. "Then they'll die well," the chaplain snapped, and his hand cut through the air in a gesture to the work crews. Drills ground into stone, scoops clawed piles of rubble aside, and the slaves of the Crimson Fist chapter began to dig. It took 3 days to make the first discovery. By this time, the guard was nearing the edge of Southspire, mere hours from their final encounter with the greenskin warlord. The Fists remained at the Kantoral Palace, silently admiring the Revenant's decision to die on the offensive, rather than retreat and die in their makeshift fort camp. 3 days had passed since the guard rolled out. 3 days of random sieges and petty assaults, punctuating the sunlit hours and the long nights. Although the orcs had been crushed in the area, wandering bands of savages still attacked the Crimson Fist's position. Each of the attempts made by the snorting, roaring mobs were met with torrents of heavy bolter fire from the grounded Thunderhawks and seasoned killing prowess of Squad Demetrian as they maintained a perimeter vigil day and night, never resting, never sleeping. On the evening of the third day, as the dull sun fell below the horizon, one of the serfs cried out. He'd found something, and the Astartes came running. The first boy was dead. His scout's armour was largely intact, as was his body. Vane was the one to lift the corpse from its rubble grave, treating it with all due honour as he laid it out on the ground by the first Thunderhawk. Argo came over once the examinations were complete to intone the rite of blessed release. He knelt by the body, pressing his slipped palm to the slain boy's forehead and leaving a smear of blood that mixed with the dirt on the child's dusty face.
"Novice Ferel,"
Vane consulted his nethicarium, tapping at the keypad as he examined the readout.
"Age 13. Initial stages of implementation."
"There's very little decay," Argo observed in a soft voice.
"No. Blood and tissue samples indicate he died 3 or 4 days ago.
My guess would be the day before we arrived.
4 months, Argo whispered, looking back over the rubble. He was under there for 4 months, and we were 3 days too late. That...
What?
Vane closed his nethicarium and reset the data display. Surgical cutting tools snicked back into his bracer. That isn't fair, Argo finished. He knew how foolish the words sounded.
If he'd been fully human, he'd have died in the first 2 weeks. Thirst, starvation, trauma. It was a miracle his initial implantations even allowed him to survive this long. Almost 16 weeks, Argo. That's worthy of the Rolls of Honor itself.
They'd avoided discussing the odds up until now. It was a mission none of the squad expected to fulfill with anything approaching glory. 16 weeks. Argo closed his eyes, though his helm stared at Vane, its gaze unbroken.
Even without the Suzanne membrane,
Vane was tapping keys on his nethicarium bracer.
My physiology will allow the slowing of the metabolism and the near cessation of many biofunctions. It is still within the edge of prospective boundaries that an Astartes from the gene seed of Rogaldorn could survive the duration.
Argo nodded. Full Astartes could survive. Could, potentially, survive. That, however, wasn't the true issue. The captain looked over his shoulder, where the corpse of the young novice lay.
Coin! Snapped the vox. Coin at the safe perimeter!
Argo and Vane were already running.
That's penance for you, Imric.
Yes, brother chaplain. I'll do it right after we kill these whore-sun aliens who've taken such umbrage at my trophies.
The second body was discovered 50 meters away, 2 hours later. It was a dry husk, deep in waterless decay, and it took Vane several minutes to identify the corpse as Novice Amadon, age 15, at the second stage of Astartes' implantation.
He's been dead for months,
Vane said, without needing to point out the crushed ribcage and severed right leg. Scraps of scout armour still clung to the dry, fleshy remnants.
He was killed when the palace fell.
The chaplain was conducting the funerary rite on Novice Amadon when the first survivor was found.
Argo!
The vox crackled live with Vane's excited voice.
Blood of the Primarch, Argo! Come over here now!
Argo clenched his teeth.
A moment, please.
He pressed his cut palm to the ruined corpse's skull.
Argo, now!
The chaplain forced his twin hearts to slow in their beat as he suppressed his eagerness and finished the rite. Such things were a matter of tradition. Such things mattered, and the dead must be respected for their sacrifice. After what seemed an age, he rose to his feet and moved over to where Vane and Demetrian were helping the survivor from the rubble. His targeting reticule outlined the figure in a flash, indicating a failed lock-on. A runic symbol flashed onto his retinas. Gene seed failsafe. Target denied. The figure was bone-thin, on shaking legs. Argo's lens display conceded to a passive lock on the emaciated wraith, and at first all he saw was the digital display of low pulsing life signs under the figure's name. He couldn't believe anyone, even an Astartes, could be that weak and still alive. The name registered at last, a moment before Vane and Demetrian brought the figure close enough to recognize. Hollow-cheeked, sunken-eyed, and looking more dead than alive, the older Astartes grinned when he saw Argo. The chaplain didn't miss the resemblance between the survivor's wasted face and his own skull helm.
Who have you found?
Imric voxed, sounding annoyed to be missing the discovery. Argo tried to speak but couldn't form the words. It was Vane who answered.
Noclitan. We found Scout Sergeant Noclitan.
The skeleton figure, the sergeant responsible for training both Argo and Vane in the same squad, kept grinning as he took in the hulking form of Argo's black battle plate.
Hello, my boy,
Noclitan said, and his voice was strong despite the scratchy edge and the veteran's shivering limbs.
You took your damn time.
We didn't know.
I can see why they made you a chaplain with oratory like that.
The sergeant paused to cough, a dry rasp of a sound that brought blood to his lips.
Now stop standing around, slack-jawed, and save the rest of my boys.
Three of them had survived. Three of the 10. It was enough to justify the mission. Far more than enough. A single fist novice would have justified the risk. For 4 months they had survived in the rubble, and they each emerged as wasted husks, life signs barely flickering on Vane's nethicarium. Noctlatan was the only one with the power of speech remaining to him. The two novices in their ruined armour were little more than tangles of withered limbs, barely breathing, drifting in and out of silent delirium. The squad had been entombed since the Cantoral Palace had fallen. Noctlatan's scout squad were embattled in the Undercroft as the explosives ticked towards detonation and had been unable to escape the blast area. 7 dead, 3 alive. A small but blessed victory, torn from the jaws of catastrophe. As the servitors stored the digging equipment and the serfs readied the Thunderhawks for orbital flight, Argo sat with Noctlatan in the modest apothecarian. Vane tended to the 2 novices, neither one older than 16.
"Dawn's holy hand,"
Noctlatan said, fixing the chaplain with his grey eyes.
"What happened to Vane?"
"A demon.
Is it dead?"
"Of course it's dead."
"Yes, of course. You see that one there?"
Noctlatan waved a weak hand in the direction of the stretcher next to him.
"That's Novice Zephyre."
Zephyre wheezed into a rebreather mask that covered half his face. Lines of angry tissue marked his temples and neck, where veins stood out like lightning streaks. Argo watched the boy's laboured breathing. Zephyre was the scout squad's epistolary candidate, marked by the chapter librarian for the power of his psychic gift. "He will be greatly honoured by Chapter Master Cantor for this," the chaplain said.
"Damn right he will. Almost killed him, you know. Day and night screaming into the warp, and hoping one of the librarian would hear it. We were trapped close to one another. He would whisper and mutter, speaking of how he was riding 100 minds to reach one we could trust so many systems away."
Argo didn't know what to say. It was a psychic feat of incredible strength. When one of the chapter's epistolaries had reported the weak yet crazed contact, it had been all the incentive the chapter's highest echelons had needed. A recovery operation was mounted immediately.
"Great things ahead for him,"
Noctlatan grinned.
"Did you find my bolter, boy?"
They hadn't. It showed on Argo's face.
"Ah, well."
Noctlatan lay back on the stretcher, plugged into an array of tubes and wires.
"I'll miss that weapon without a doubt. It was a fine gun. A fine gun. I killed a gene-stealer patriarch genus with that bolter. Tore its head clean off."
"We'll be taking off in a few minutes. The vigil waits in orbit. Once aboard, we make haste for Rin's world, as soon as we break away from Cyral." Noctlatan sat up again, trembling and overtaxing his remaining strength, as his glare speared Argo's eyes.
"You told me the Radamai was still here, still advancing on this new warlord."
"They are. They'll engage the enemy's main force this afternoon, if initial projections were correct."
"You'd abandon the Revenants. Boy, what's wrong with you?"
"Please don't call me boy, sir. Chapter Master Cantor?"
"Pedro Cantor. Blessings upon my old friend isn't here, my boy. You are. And by Dawn's holy hand, you want to face the Emperor one day knowing you ran from this fight?"
"The odds are beyond overwhelming. Everything we came to achieve would be void if we die in this battle." Noctlatan grasped at Argo's brazier, clenching the smooth black ceramite in a thin-fingered claw that shook as if palsied.
"You are the future of this chapter."
His grey eyes were the colour of summer storms.
"You shape the path these novices will one day walk."
Argo rose to his feet, letting his mentor's hand slip from his arm, and left the room without a word. The Thunderhawk screamed across the night sky, its downward thrusters kicking in as it hovered 400 meters high. Its wing-mounted bolters aimed at the ground, barking in an unremitting stream. The servitors slaved to the weapons didn't even need to aim. They couldn't miss the horde below, a sea of green skin and chattering weapons, bringing a diminished cluster of grey. The Revenant's last stand. The guns cut out after a minute, autoloaders cycling but not opening fire again. On the ground, the armoured divisions of the Radamar kept up their onslaught against the Orc host in the city's ruins, and Orvaron watched the Crimson Fist gunship as it stayed aloft, out of enemy fire range.
"It's the Fists,"
Dace said, and Orvaron smiled to himself at the man's painfully obvious statement. Good old Dace. No better man to die with.
"We did well, Dace. Almost reached that bastard warlord, eh?"
"We did fine, sir."
The Major was still looking up at the sky, ignoring the war hammering around him.
"So what are the Fists doing exactly?" the Lord General asked. "My eyes aren't what they once were."
"There..."
Argo's lens displays registered the altitude as he fell. The ground soared up fast in his red-tinted vision, and he clutched his sword and bolter tightly, blink-clicking the propulsion icon at the edge of his sight. The weighty jump pack on his back fired in a roaring kick, slowing his descent, but he still landed with jarring force ahead of the others. He hit the ground running and his weapons sang. Left and right, he slashed his gladius into flesh and fired a relentless stream from his bolter, clearing a space around him in the thick of the churning orcish tide. Tomo was next, thudding to the ground and repeating Argo's lethal sprint. Then Demetrian, then Vane. Imric was last, much to his gore. The others, whirling and killing, heard his curses as they started without him. 20 meters ahead of them, through the ocean of writhing orcish flesh, unmistakable in salvaged armour that swelled his form to the size of an Astartes dreadnought, was the green-skinned warlord. Imric landed and opened up with his bolter, running for the brute.
"He's mine," he voxed to the others. "That skull is mine."
In two gauntleted fists, one red, one black, the ancient weapon Traitor's Bane was wreathed in coruscating waves of sparking force. The relic mace smashed aside three orcs in a single swing, sending their broken forms to the ground, still twitching with energy.
"Now!"
Argo stopped screaming the litanies of hate, drawing breath to reply to Imric and the squad behind him.
"The kind lord is mine."
Thanks very much for watching, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that. I really like that. I'd never read this before. I was going through some of these compendium books and stuff I've got, and I was like, oh, what's this? Never read it before. Completely missed it. I don't know if that was like one of his first ones. I'm guessing it probably was. I'm guessing it was probably one of Aaron Dembski Bowden's first submissions to Black Library, I guess you'd say. Might have been his first, thinking about it. Great little read, great story. I really like the Crimson Fists, aesthetically. I like the look. I like the lore. But any time I've read anything about them, they've always been a big disappointment. Like that Siege of Rinsworld, I didn't like that book at all. I don't know what it was. Multitude of things, I think, but it really rubbed me the wrong way. Just like the choices that the characters made, I was just like, that doesn't seem right. Seemed a bit silly. But, I guess that was fine. A little bit more interesting than just your general bolter porn, and doesn't include a dreadnought this time. So that's a change. All right. Thank you, everybody, for supporting the channel. You can see your names here. But a few additional people joined the Patreon, become patrons on Patreon recently, and a few guys over on the YouTube membership thing. Thank you all for your support. Honestly, lads, it means the world because it really helps me do this, you know. And if anyone else would like to join this roll call of honour, then please do consider using the link below to become a YouTube member. You get all the emojis then, or over on Patreon if you prefer that. It really helps though anyway, lads, and thanks very much. No obligation, and if you ever need to stop, don't feel bad about it, it's perfectly fine. It's great, thank you. And please remember to like the video, please do that, subscribe if you're not subscribed, and make sure you hit the little bell so you get notified when I do stuff, and let me know in the comments what you think, and
Yeah. I'll see you next time. Thanks very much for watching. Have a good one. Cheers. Bye.